Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Okay, welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Happy you could join us again today, and just so we can go ahead and get started, let's deal with our usual disclaimer that just because you hear about a tax strategy or two, or perhaps you hear about an opportunity for investing with third parties, please don't rush out and implement said strategies or opportunities right away. Let's let you check with your current advisors, your financial planners, your tax counsel, your legal counsel, your real estate advisors, and let's make sure that based on your current facts and circumstances that what you heard is one, correct, and more importantly that it syncs up with your current facts and circumstances. If you don't have advisors that consult in the areas that we discuss, feel free to go to our website at beaplannershow.com, and at the top of that site you'll see a link to forms. And if you'll fill out at least step one on that page, it's form one, step one, you can then go to the link right next to the forms and book or schedule a call. And I'll be happy to spend a few minutes with you on the phone once I've got your forms, so I can try to understand more about what you're about, and therefore how we might be able to work with you and help you achieve your goals and objectives. Okay, well, I've added just a couple other articles to the resources page of our website, which can be found on the same site that I mentioned, the beaplannershow.com site, and if you'll go to that site and let's see here, let me make sure I'm telling you right, I was changing some things around. Yeah, if you'll go to that site and look at the resources link, you can go to the news tab, and or you can follow along, or you can circle back later and take a look at some of these details. I also, and I spoke about this a couple days ago, this past on the Friday show, I added a video to the video tab there. Senator Rand Paul has a pretty succinct summary again. House Representatives, or Senators, discuss the topic in public. I'm going to start adding those videos to the site. And I'm also got a bunch of videos that I've saved off for the Social Security and Medicare mess, which is all part and parcel. But in any event, the numbers in your head, it's only going to get worse. And if you're tuned in to what the topic is, you'll
you tend to understand when you look from Congress is mean, but it's political. They do, you know, that at some point they're not going to be able to spend as much as we spend now. And yeah, there's some mechanisms they've got with the financial, the collections or the tax receipts that we bring in. They can opt to just pay the interest on the debt if they have to at some point, which may be sooner than we think, instead of some of the discretionary items that we take care of now. But, you know, the remaining portion, the discretionary portion of our budget is dwindling. And it's not going to be long before we will have blown through the remainder. And then you've got a real problem when you're trying to sell additional debt or treasury bonds, T-bills, as it were. And, you know, I would suggest to you that in many respects, we're already, I mean, as Rand Paul points out in that video, if we were a household, we would be at a point where we're borrowing each month to pay the rent. You know, it's not a situation that you would want. But in any event, I'll let you watch the video. It's not a very long one, so it's absolutely worth taking a look. And while you're out there, you might want to look at the David Swikert. He's a congressman from Arizona, and he's got a couple videos, or we've got a couple of his videos on the site. And I'll tell you, he hits the nail on the head. And again, it's very succinct, 30 minutes, I believe, on both of them. And if you take a look at it, will mention as why we keep in the topic. There's a reason. You know, it's bad. And, you know, it's only going to be a matter of a few short years before we're there. And I don't know. It's probably be a combination of things that get. But that's the large expression is it's not going to much better because the magnitude of the debt is so bad it's to take really, more of the policy change in this country. And the policy direction that is exactly the antithesis of what we're doing now. You know, now we're taking care of other nations' asylum seekers, whether rightly or wrongly. I mean, I guess we could debate the veracity of, you know, whether it's legitimate, the reasons people are coming to America. I mean, beyond just, oh, we like your jobs and we want to live in your country, we feel like it's safer, etc., which that's kind of ironic. If you look at the crime scenario in, you know, the largest American cities, and it's interesting that you know, in America we think we've gotten much more or much less safe, and yet you got to put it in perspective, folks. And it's like, you know, I remember I had a professor way back in the day at U of H there when I was going to summer school way back in 1979, I believe it was. Gosh, it's hard to believe. And this guy was interesting beyond the fact that he wore the same
outfit every day. I don't know, but what he had eight of them. I mean, who am I? But it was he was a flower child from the 60s, probably, or maybe a little bit younger, since he was teaching me at 8 years old. I guess he would have had to have gone back maybe a few more years past the 60s, going backward. But anyway, he made the comment. There were a couple things he said, but one of the two that I'm going to share with you, and I'll still remember it like it was yesterday. He was talking about people that think they're, I guess, in a better situation than others, or maybe a worse situation. Works either way. And he said, no matter where you're at in the overall spectrum of life, and I guess you could apply this to safe living quarters, there's always somebody looking up, thinking, wow, if I could just get to America, if I could just live in the city of Houston, as an example, or the city of Dallas, it would be so much better, not realizing the things we've got that aren't necessarily the best in the world. On the other hand, what you're always comparing against is what your paradigm is, what you know about. And I've learned over the years that it's all relative. And in any event, the flip side of that story was, and then even somebody at the top that's looking down saying, well, gee, I'm glad I don't live in Houston. I live in Austin. Well, times change. And even the people you rarely never think you, but there's always somebody looking down, there's always somebody looking up. And I'll tell you, I look at what we're living on the fence of the countries, on the immigrant issue, I mean, it's a situation where, it's comic. I heard from which this was on or podcast, but we're talking about how the current administration has even changed the words of the earth. They're no longer calling them immigrants. God forbid they call them illegal immigrants. They're referring to them as newcomers. They've turned it into almost like dropping your kids off at college for the first time. They have a room for the living quarters. Of some sort. They're giving them vacation, giving them a food card. It's basically like showing up first day at the university. You're dropping your kid off, I guess, a couple days before. And they're referring to them as newcomers, unlike the incoming fresh class. And it's all a matter of semantics. We're talking about an excitement in a new way, maybe things improve or not, as it may be. When you look at the the young lady in Georgia that got murdered, the nursing student, I believe she was. And, of course, the current administration, no president has bothered to call the parents. It's atrocious. But that said, we're going the wrong way. In terms of the budgetary, let's just focus on the budgetary implication. We can deal with the political stuff on another day, but we are far outspending this country's resources, and it's not going to be too long, another 4 or 5 years, when we will be outspending our financial resources, including the ability to borrow. And that's going to be extremely problematic. Let's do this. We've passed our first break. Let's go ahead and take it now, and we'll circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
The song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fantasies. And there are many.
Apologize here.
With big dreams and fantasies.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Apparently we are having some audio difficulties. I had a couple texts come in, and I apologize for that. I'm not sure whether it's my connection, or maybe the connection back in Houston. I don't know, but it seems to be coming and going. We are sorry for that. And so, okay, so going to the planner show is resources news link. We've got an article on commercial bridge loans, fast, flexible financing. For multi-family investors, this sounds all nice and a beautiful option, etc. Although, whether
city becomes the truth. Let me pull this article up and get my Zoom working. I tell you, thank God for technology. Thank God for the Apple Magic Mouse and how easy it is to Zoom your page so that us old folks can read. Okay, with constantly changing market condition, investors sometimes need access to capital with flexible terms to improve or secure an investment. Commercial bridge loans are a popular financing tool that provides borrowers with short-term capital for renovations and purchases. They are often the perfect first step in the door to the beginning of a long-term financial partnership, or as a lot of syndicators are finding out right about now, it can be the last step in getting booted out the back door as they're getting foreclosed on. And this article is put out by, let's see, is this Arbor? Yeah, I believe it is an Arbor REIT, which they're also a big lender. And boy, they foreclosed on a few. In fact, I just read a few days ago that Apple's Way, the syndicator in Houston, or maybe they're based in Dallas, but they had, I think they've had five properties, maybe even six, get foreclosed on in the Houston market. And apparently they've got two more that Arbor is getting ready to lower the hammer on as well. So in any event, bridge loans make wonderful sense if you've got a way out or you've got a business plan that you can fairly quickly execute so that the story you told the lender on the front end has been achieved, and then you are likely to be able to refinance on the back end. That said, you may not like the rate, you may not like any assorted of guarantees that we're seeing now on some of the quote non-recourse loans. They're finding other things to tie their guarantee to, and so it's not easy. But in any event, the bridge loan amounts usually range from 65% to 75% LTVs based on the stabilized value of the property, which that means you're not getting a whole lot of money if you're buying a value add type property that's a, you know, beat up old apartment building that you're going to bring up to market. So I would tell you the reality is we're seeing a lot of 50%, 50 to 55% loan to values or LTVs in projects that we've reviewed. But anyway, the advantages, they've listed five here: speed, loan term flexibility, ability to draw funds as needed, market timing, no prepayment penalties. And I've seen exceptions to every one of those, so I wouldn't necessarily count on that. But in any event, and then Arbor pats themselves on the back here with more than 30 years of experience in multifamily. Arbor understands the opportunities and obstacles investors face across changing markets. I might even add, it seems like they try to take advantage of that, if you want my very frank assessment. And I personally would avoid Arbor's bridge loans like the plague. It's just me. I'm sure you can find, if you know many folks that operate in the syndication world, you can find others that can give you their review, but I'm not a big fan there. Let's talk about another article that is also from Arbor this week, talking about where
Virginia has a couple of outstanding multifamily markets currently, and you know that it kind of makes sense given how much money we're spending that we don't have as a government, that concentration of tech and engineering folks, companies in Alexandria and Arlington more than double, or they've got a concentration that's more than double the national average. And the household incomes of renters in Alexandria and Arlington have now eclipsed those of renters in the rest of the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. That says a lot. And traditionally, when we thought of tech hubs, we've thought of Silicon Valley, Boston, New York, or perhaps what used to be growth markets, recent growth markets like Austin and Miami. By the way, Miami is one of the top 10 U.S. cities. It's in the worst financial predicament. I didn't have time to put an article up. I'll try to have it for this coming week show. Miami's got a bad situation with their municipal budget. It's tied a lot, as most cities are, their pension or retirement plans or what's like a ball and chain around their neck. But Austin has a significant newcomer, let's start using the lingo that the administration prefers. They've got a big newcomer. They're doing a lot of welcomings now in Austin. Not quite as many as coming over Brownsville or El Paso or Del Rio, I guess. They're welcoming even more at those locations, but it's quickly, Northern Virginia is quickly becoming a bona fide technology hub. I was going to see if they had the average rents identified here. Just scan the rest of this article. And of course, Amazon is in that area too. It's had its, let's see. Well, this is back in 2018. Amazon selected Arlington as its new East Coast headquarters. In 2022, Boeing followed suit, relocating from Chicago. And then, of course, the AI boom and its integration with government operations, God help us, should provide another boost for this burgeoning tech hub. Anyway, okay, let's see, further down. Rentals surge is the subsection. The labor market success of Arlington and Alexandria, transforming the hubs into full-fledged live and work play, or live-work-play districts. Let's see, it's made up of Pentagon City, Crystal City, and Potomac Yard. Those are, first two are Arlington, and the last one is Alexandria. It's home to more than 450 shops and restaurants, and is the target of $8 billion worth of planned investments, or investment. Household income for renters is average of $126,500 for Arlington and $99,000 for Alexandria. So those are pretty healthy numbers. Here we go. Here's the apartment rents. Arlington is $2,207 and Alexandria is $1,952. Pretty hefty rents. And then well above average rents throughout the rest of the metro area at $1,749. So anyway, I'm sure that means there will be a rush to build, and then that new supply will have to be absorbed into that market. And they'll probably temporarily have a pause here in a couple, 3 years based on that. Let's do this. We're just a couple minutes away from our next break. Let's go ahead and take it, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about what would a week be without the Roth conversion topic. We'll be right back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Reach your soul, reach down. Reach out and lead me. Guide me and keep me in the shelter of your care each day.
Welcome back. Sorry about that. Let's see. I was going to bring up again the topic of the Roth conversion, and I have an article there on the site. We discussed this. Let's see. When it's a Kiplinger article. Let's see. Was it this past Friday or maybe last Sunday? But in any event, it is a late February, February 21st. You could face a nasty tax surprise or tax shock in 2024. Well, that's one that actually I need to talk about. That's not the one I was looking for. I'll find the Roth article here momentarily. In any event, had a video starting to play there on this site. I don't think I mentioned the nasty tax shock is that the IRS has gradually been ratcheting up the underpayment of estimated tax interest rate. And you know, I hesitate to call the underpayment of estimated tax a penalty, even though technically that's how the IRS refers to it. It's nothing more as than interest on the amount you should have paid. There is no penalty on the amount you should have paid. It's simply as if you unilaterally entered into a loan with IRS. In other words, you decided, hey, I don't have the money for whatever reason. You could have the money tied up in an investment making more than the current rate, which is up now to 8, I believe it's 8%. Let me take a look here. Yes, it is 8% now. And, you know, just 2 short years ago, it was still at 3%, which was almost free. Now at 8%, you really need to think, you need to make sure you've got that money tied up in something making at least 8%, or otherwise you should liquidate and pay your estimated tax bill. But in any event, another way to pay this where you get to earn a bit more perhaps before you have to remit the dollars is if you have required minimum distributions currently underway on your retirement funds, you can delay till the very end of the year and take a RMD and instruct Schwab or Fidelity or whoever the custodian is to go ahead and remit. You define the amount. You could say, hey, I want a distribution of $18,000 and I want 15 of it remitted to the IRS as federal income tax withholding, or all 18 of it, okay? And that will get treated as if it got made on across all four of the estimated tax payment dates for the year. So it's a great way to backfill any deadlines that you mentioned or that you missed, I'm sorry. And it's very easy to do. I wouldn't wait till the last day, but you certainly could wait, you know, to the last week and very comfortably be able to execute that strategy. I've been doing it for years, works great. Our clients may have had a little bit of fear and trepidation the first couple times, but once they see it, makes imminent sense. And then that means that they get the use of that money for, you know, at least an extra 8 months. I guess April 15th would be the first estimated tax payment due date. And so when you do it the way I'm suggesting, vis-a-vis withholding, it's critical now. It's got to be done via a federal income tax, it's FIT, withholding arrangement. And it wouldn't just be your custodial firm with your RMDs. You could have withholding taken out by a bank or a mutual fund. I mean, there's a number of ways to get federal income tax withholding into the IRS besides a W-2 paycheck type scenario. But in any event, instead of starting to send money on April the 15th, you can hold on to it and send it again vis-a-vis the withholding that occurs at the end of the year. So anyway, if you have questions about that, let me know. Happy to find an article or two. This doesn't really explain anything except the change very well, but I've got some I can pull for that. Okay, let me go back real quick and see if I can't find the Roth article. Let's see. Well, maybe it's been a little bit longer than I thought. Well, I can still talk about it. As you know, if you listen to the show, I've been talking for quite some time about the Roth conversion, and the reason is quite simple. If you'll refer back to what we discussed at the top of the show, the tax train is coming. It's a simple situation that involves the math of how we're spending much more than we're bringing in for tax receipts. And by the way, for those that like to bemoan the Trump tax cuts and how it gave a big break to the wealthy, understand that the collections, the receipts that came in when that tax act took effect. I don't have the exact number in front of me. I don't think it's in. I just pulled an article trying to get that exact number, but I want to say it was $2 trillion or so in additional collections. And of course, what Congress do? They spent, you know, twice that much. So, you know, the problem we've got, again, it's policy that's slowly converting into math, because once we cannot borrow, which is what's going to happen, or if we do have the ability to sell debt, the folks that are buying it are going to want a lot more interest on that debt than we're paying currently. Although the interest rate is gradually working its way up. And in fact, there's a quote in the article. I'm looking at an article that's on the site from 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's this article, CBO updated their 10-year forecast. And in any event, the article points out that for the first time in history, we will exceed, let's see, interest on the national debt. This is a quote, by the way, from Maya McGinnis, the executive director, CEO of the Committee for Responsible Fiscal Budget, or maybe that's federal budget. I've forgotten. Both words work, in my opinion. But in any event, she points out that, quote, interest on the national debt already higher than federal spending on children or Medicaid will exceed spending on defense this year on its way to $1 trillion by 2026. And I've seen other economists say that we're hitting that this year. So I'm not sure. Seems like from one economist to the other, I wish they could settle on a set of criteria that they all sync up to. But in any event, whether it's 2024 or fiscal year 2024 or fiscal year 2026, it's such a tragic scenario, it doesn't much matter. It's bad either way. And as she said here, this is no way to run a country. Policymakers need to take this somber moment to reflect on the grave situation we face and commit themselves to do better. And this was as a result of the CBO projected numbers. And I'll just tell you real quick, the jump, let's see, over the next 10 years, the annual deficit will go from this year's $1.6 trillion to $1.8 trillion next year, then returns to $1.6 trillion by 2027. Thereafter, the projected deficits steadily mount, reaching $2.6 trillion in 2034. And that will, at that point, us up to the $48 trillion cumulative deficit. Yeah, $48.3 trillion by the end of 2034. Insane. That means that we'll once again double. And I don't know how long it'll take to double again, but I don't think it's going to be. In fact, I'm not sure we're going to get $48.3 trillion because I'm not sure that we can sell more debt. I think, you know, at some point, when the downgrading starts, you know, we've already been downgraded once here in the recent past on the nation's debt quality. I'm sure there'll be more downgrades, and that's going to make it hard to get to this $48 trillion cumulative deficit by 2034. In any event, so what do we do? If we're someone that's headed to retirement and maybe already in retirement, depending on your amount of pre-tax retirement wealth, depending on your heirs, your legacy of who you might want to leave the money to, I don't suggest that anyone is too old. It depends on what you, where you want your money to go. And if you want to give your heirs funds that are tax-free, then I don't, personally, as a consultant, I have no problem recommending people take advantage of Roth conversions now because the tax rates, the tax brackets, are on sale. They've never been lower in most of our lifetimes. I was born in 1960. I think the 1963, maybe through 63 or 64, we had a rate that was higher. But since then, our brackets, our tax rates have never been lower. And so take advantage. They're on sale. And I'm going to suggest they're on sale to the tune of about 50% of what's coming. Maybe not all at one time, but certainly by 2029, 2030, depending on what other policy changes we make. And it's going to take a combination. It's not just raising the rates, especially not just raising the rates on the quote wealthy. It's going to take a lot more than the wealthy to move the needle on the amount of deficit that we have. And, you know, if you look at cutting certain areas of the budget, like, you know, the Republicans like to complain about all the foreign aid. That's been the big rub on the current Ukraine and Israel bill that I'm not sure that it has not actually passed, but they got until the 8th to work that out. Now that they agreed to punt for another week, back on the 1st last week. But, you know, when you, and essentially it's, I don't think it's so much that we don't want to help Ukraine and Israel, but it's a combination. You've got the folks like Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, that are pointing out that, hey, you know, whether we want to help or not, we don't have the money. We're borrowing money to pay for defense for these other nations. And in some cases, they didn't spend enough of their own money. And so why are we doing that? Would be the one viewpoint. And then the other view is that, well, you know, it's always cheaper to fight a war on foreign soil, or it's cheaper in many respects, not necessarily, quote, always cheaper, I shouldn't have said that, than fighting one on our own soil. Although in this day and time, with all the hypersonic missiles and the space type missiles that are being bantered about, I'm not sure that we're all, or any of us, are immune from attack. But bottom line is, we don't have the money to defend the rest of the world. It's just a matter of math. It's not politics. I'd love to be able to say, hey, we've got so much money coming in tax receipts. You know, our GDP, let's find that button and push it so we can double, triple, quadruple, whatever we need to do on GDP to ramp those tax receipts up. And then, yeah, at that point, we should be able to afford even more spending than we do now. But in any event, Roth conversions give us the ability, if you have pre-tax IRAs or pre-tax 401s, to convert all or a portion. You can break it into chunks, you know, convert, 20% of your balances per year for the next 5 years should get you right up to the point that I would strongly suggest that rates will have gone up significantly 5 years out from now. And in fact, I think they'll go up more than the little bit they're going to go up 1-1 of 2026, just by virtue of the sunsetting of the 2017 Tax Act's rates, and then the brackets, the additional brackets that were overlaid to give us a little bit of benefit depending on where your taxable income fell. You know, we go back to three brackets. We go back to top rates of 39.8 instead of 37, I believe it is, or 39 rather, when you add the Medicare or the Obamacare portion, that gets you on up. That's the net investment income tax that gets you on up to 43.8, I believe it is. So in any event, now's the time. Get started. And if you pair the conversion of pre-tax funds with investing in these real estate private partnerships, you have the ability to cut your conversion costs, the tax that you're going to pay. Because you got to, essentially what you're going to do is you're going to say, okay, I don't want to wait for the future to pay the tax bill because I don't know what it's going to be. Imagine you're in business with someone as a partner where you had no idea what their ownership percentage was, and you were just going to wait until someday when the demand is made to figure it out. And again, it's no way to run a country for us to take the same approach when it comes to paying the taxes due on the required minimum distributions. Let's fast forward those distributions to today and next year this time and the following year this time, and let's convert to Roth. And if we can do it after we get your money rolled over to a self-directed IRA or 401 trust, also known as a solo K, then you have the ability to direct those funds at that point, because they'll be self-directed, into the real estate private partnerships that we consult with our clients on. And once invested in private company investments, then you're going to get significant discounts in the level of tax that gets paid to convert to Roth. It's a win-win scenario for doing Roth conversions. Well, I believe we've come to the end of the show once again, and enjoyed talking about these topics as usual, and would love to hear from you if you've got questions or would otherwise want to consider working with us. We'll be happy to spend some time on the phone with you to find out more about you and whether we can add value to your go-forward planning. We'll be back this coming week with more Be A Planner Show Thursday at 2 p.m. for the first time, and then Friday at 11 a.m., and then again Sunday at 7 a.m.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.